to the Stranger Still podcast. I'm Kathleen.
And I'm Miles.
And welcome back to our character by character Stranger Things rewatch, where we are following our 11 main characters throughout the series, and we're almost through.
And we are almost through our little choose your own adventure series here. I love it. I love going character by character.
Yes, it's been so fun so far. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, TikTok, YouTube at StrangerStill22. Also, please subscribe, share, review us on Spotify, Apple, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Our ninth character, the 11 lump... Bumblebee. The 11 lovin'. The 11 lovin', Quarry jumpin', Friend Truthin', the Dungeon Master, Heart of the Party, it's Mike Wheeler!
Flawless.
Oh, and this is going to be, I mean, the next three, Mike, Will, 11, that we've chosen to close out, there's so much interweaving, there's so much...
Yes, there absolutely is.
...connection they have between them, so this is going to be a lot of fun. We're kind of... The main thrust of the plot, really, of Stranger Things, is these three.
You know, I have to start off by saying Mike has been very difficult for me. Mm. I'm really looking forward to doing the Will episode.
Yeah.
But you're kind of opposite, right?
Yeah.
You're like ready to delve into Mike.
Heck yeah. And uncertain what I'm going to say about Will. So it'll be tough. So season one, we meet Mike. He's the leader of the Dungeons and Dragons party. He's given all the something is coming, hungry for blood, you know, and they eventually lose Will, or they that night lose Will for real to a real Demogorgon. And while they are searching for Will in the woods, they stumble upon 11, and Mike's life is changed. He
immediately
he immediately sees the good in this little girl that they found in the woods. And I guess that's a great place to start. Why is he so immediately trusting of 11? Especially in contrast to Lucas, who is not.
So I think Mike is really able to kind of see the struggles in other people, which makes him a good leader of their like friend group. Mm. But I also think he's able to see that kind of lost, fearful look in Eleven's eyes because it's something that he can kind of identify with himself. Mm. You know, he's being bullied by those two kids in school. I don't remember their names because they suck. They're terrible and they're mean.
I know the names, but I won't dignify the podcast by saying them.
But I think it's for that reason that it's kind of allowed him to be empathetic to at least part of what she's feeling. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's what allows him to kind of instantly want to help her, because not only can he relate, but also he has friends that help kind of cushion his hurt, but she clearly has no one. And I think he sees that.
He sees that. And it's, in my opinion, that's the number one and most important thing in Stranger Things that there is that Mike recognizes the good in 11, and eventually Dustin does, and eventually Lucas does as well. But that is the most important thing, because really, think about it. They found a superpowered girl in the woods who's afraid and doesn't know the word trust, and you know, that isn't normal.
No.
And that's their superpower. That's the ultimate moment that everything else spins from. And Mike, that very first scene of the second episode, he is compassionate to her, you know, in the, oh, you don't want the door closed? You know, he keeps his promises to her. He's immediately there.
Yeah.
Now, he does have some wobbles of faith throughout the first season, which is what I like.
Small wobbles.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he, like, when 11 leads them and they find Will's body, he's yelling, like, what's wrong with you? You know, he's like mirroring Lucas's language to her. So he has a few wobbles, but eventually the fight at the junkyard, where Mike again yells at 11, like, why are you doing this? You know, why did you fake our compasses? Lucas storms off, 11 disappears, and Mike pretty much immediately realizes 11 was just trying to protect us.
Right.
And he's back to it. A search for 11 to apologize, and they run into those bullies who shall remain nameless.
Mean old guys.
Mean guys who chase Dustin and Mike to the quarry, and they're going to take out Dustin's teeth with their knife. Unless Mike jumps off the quarry into the water. And ultimately, he does. he jumps off.
He's totally willing to do that.
And he's, of course, saved by Eleven, who takes it back and snaps the bully's arm and sends him off with Justin screaming, "She'll kill you." But this is Mike's finest hour, don't you think? This moment.
I do. I do. Also, though, I don't think he, like, really understands the true danger of jumping off that cliff.
I was going to ask you that, yeah.
We know, we as the audience, and it's even mentioned by Hopper, know that if anyone were to jump off of that, it would be instant death. It's like hitting concrete.
Okay, so he thinks he's like jumping off the dock. And
yes, okay. I think he does understand there's a serious danger there. And so there is still something very heroic about the fact that he's willing to jump off this cliff to protect his friend.
And it's definitely a loyalty that people love in Mike, that he was willing to do that, because it's still probably the scariest thing he's ever done in his life.
Oh, yeah. And you can't, I mean, loyalty right there. Yeah. That is like a really great character description of him.
So at this point, it really feels while you're watching that Mike is the central character of Stranger Things. Wouldn't you say he's the protagonist of the story? Do you think he's still the protagonist, though, now that we've gotten four seasons in?
I think, okay, so aside from Eleven, Mike definitely is the star of season one, but I think it's more of like a foundation to the seasons to come. So he's like establishing the link between him and Eleven, helping to illustrate that solidity of our favorite character's friend group, you know. He's building the loyal personality of his own character, that loyal connection between him and Eleven. It's so important throughout Stranger Things, but it also helps us as the audience become loyal to Eleven. But once we have that, I feel like the Duffer brothers are kind of ready to move on and just further develop the other main characters. So we do kind of stray away from him being like central.
Yeah, I think you're right. Mike kind of carries the main character mantle or baton until he's ready to, or until we're ready for him to hand it off to Eleven.
Right.
And Eleven, at the end of season one and beginning of season two, she's the one who goes on the Luke Skywalker adventure. She's the one we're really following, that we're really with.
Right.
But we're not with her at first. We're with Mike as the protagonist.
We needed somebody to bring us to her.
Yeah, and I just kind of wanted to call that out because it really, you rewatch season one and, you know, looking back at season four with Will saying, "Mike, you're the heart and you're the one who keeps our party together," it doesn't resonate as well while just watching season four.
Right.
But when you watch it all together, you're like, "Oh yeah, Mike, you know, he is the heart and he's the one who gets Eleven to that point where she can go on the Luke Skywalker adventure," basically.
And we love making Star Wars references here.
It's just my only thing that I can tie it to. And, you know, the Duffers love Star Wars as well and put tons of Star Wars stuff in the show. So I feel fine doing that. So the bullies go running. The lab locates Eleven at Mike's house. Lucas joins back up with the party. They escape Eleven, or they escape the lab.
You know, where flipping the van.
Eleven flips the van over their heads. And they connect with the adults and the teens. They go to the school for Eleven's bathtub location services that she provides to find Will and, unfortunately, Barb. And then the kids are just left alone at the high school. Jonathan and Nancy go off to kill the Demogorgon for a third time, and Hopper and Joyce go to the lab for a big plan. So the kids are just sitting there at the school, their job done,
waiting,
quote unquote.
Waiting.
And we get Mike finally spelling out his feelings for Eleven, asking her to the snowball.
Does he spell it out, though? Let's take a listen.
I don't know. Maybe we can go to the snowball together.
Snowball?
It's this cheesy school dance where you go in the gym and dance to music and stuff. I've never been, but I know you're not supposed to go with your sister.
No.
I mean, you can, but it'd be really weird. You go to school dances with someone that, you know, someone that you like.
A friend?
Not a friend. Someone like a...
Oh, the kiss.
The kiss, where he spells it out. Yeah, I think he struggles with words, but the kiss is 1,000 words.
I have to say, though, like, in comparison to his other, like, moments where he's trying to tell Eleven how he feels, this is probably the best that he does. But, he's not great at this.
No. I mean, he's 12 here? 12
yeah,
years
that's
old?
That's true. Yeah, you got to give him a little leeway here. I like that they show his vulnerability. I think it's something that we all can kind of relate to. I mm-hmm. just think it's a really cute, sweet scene.
Yeah. One detail to that scene that I forgot is that it starts with Mike screaming, okay, at Dustin's finding of the chocolate pudding.
That's right.
And then Eleven's like, pudding? He's like, chocolate goo with a spoon. And he's like, that starts their conversations about getting real food, which is about where she'll live, which is about her sister Nancy. Like, yeah. The chocolate pudding actually
somehow leads into this, somehow.
So the lab arrives at the school, Hopper's Lando betrayal, as we've talked about. And they run. Eleven blows up some heads of some lab employees. The Demogorgon corners the kids into the classroom. Eleven is exhausted, but she gets one last push to zap the Demogorgon and herself into ash, back into the Upside Down, and disappears. And Mike is crushed. And I think one thing I never really thought about until we were doing this episode, from Mike's perspective purely, does he understand Eleven's sacrifice, what she does? Because I want to tell you, the reason I asked this question is because in the scene, Mike is saying, stop. He's telling her to stop. Elle, stop. Which is just crazy. We never circle back to this, in my opinion. As she's done the evaporating thing, he's like miserable. He's covering his ears. He's not cheering Eleven on like, yay, thanks for saving our lives. He's miserable. He's covering his ears and basically crying. It's a lot different than I remember, at least.
Wow. Gosh, yeah. I mean,
I feel like he doesn't want her to do this. I feel like, I don't know what his plan is to just all die together.
Even in that moment, he understands the gravity of what she's doing. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I was kind of like, after you say that, now I'm kind of like, maybe he does more than I realized. But I was thinking that he, like, somebody of his age, do they truly understand like that type of sacrifice? I mean, she's basically like in his eyes killed herself, yep. But like, does he see that fully? I don't know. I that's a great question.
Well, he is kind of, I mean, even in season two, he's unsure. Like, is she dead or is she out there or yeah. You know what? So he doesn't really know what happened.
No. And I think he holds on to this hope too, mm-hmm. that we see in season two, which yeah. I'll definitely touch on.
Yeah. So that saves the kids, and eventually they save Will, and we see the epilogue 1 month later. Mike is back to his dungeon master ways. You know, the Thessal Hydra's here. The party is back to complete the campaign, and we just get one little moment of Mike looking in sadness at the place where Eleven slept in that basement for that week. And that sets us up for his problem in season two, which is he misses Eleven. Yeah. It's been a year. And he's called her for 356 days in a row with no answer.
See, loyalty.
Very loyal.
Yeah.
And they're playing at the arcade, and they realize Mad Max is a girl. Dustin and Lucas grow smitten with Max, and Mike is not pleased. They invite her to trick-or-treating, and Mike's, oh, she's ruining the best night of the year. And while trick-or-treating, Mike miserable because Max is there, and Will miserable because he's been seeing the mind flare while having episodes.
Just a little worrisome.
Mike and Will have a conversation where they agree to go crazy together.
Sometimes I feel like I still see her. Like she's still around.
That's a good point.
She never is. I don't know. Sometimes I feel like I'm going crazy.
Me too.
Hey, well, if we're both going crazy, then we'll go crazy together, right?
Yeah. Crazy together.
So interesting, the vocal back there in the music.
Oh, yeah.
Very elfish.
I like that you always have like really good insight to the music of Stranger Things.
I absolutely love it. It's fabulous. But Will, of course, going through his stuff, and Mike says Eleven would understand, and they're both just miserable 13-year-old boys.
You know, I really like this scene because I think like it's I think it's an important scene because it really illustrates the closeness of Mike and Will's friendship, mm-hmm. which we kind of lose in season 3 and season 4 when Eleven comes back, right? Because he's so like enamored by Eleven. Mm-hmm. And so I think this scene in particular is so important. It helps develop the storyline of their friendship throughout the next two seasons. Mm-hmm. You know, both Mike and Will are still struggling through the events of last year.
Yeah.
The, you know, the heartache that Mike's feeling, Will's connection to the Upside Down. So, like, I think this is a very, very important scene for seasons 3 and 4.
I think you're right. They both are still in season 1, basically. They're both very much still in it. And is that why Mike dislikes Max so much? Is just because she represents progress that maybe neither of them really want, you know?
You know, I think Mike feels like Eleven is somehow being replaced by Max. Mm. So Mike still has this hope that Eleven is still out there. But like, if he were to accept Max into their group, I think he feels like it would somehow betray Eleven. Mm. Like, if they accept Max, then Eleven somehow is going to be forgotten. I feel like he maybe has a little bit of that feeling.
Yeah, I could see that. I viewed it more as, like, Dustin and Lucas are moving on, and I'm not. Like, why aren't Dustin and Lucas used to be...
Yeah, I could definitely see that, too.
Yeah, used to be missing Eleven as much as me, and now they're moving on. And, of course, Dustin and Lucas trying to impress Max creates a lot of problems. Dustin is... bringing Dart to school, and Will shares with Mike it's from the Upside Down, and Mike's like, we should kill Dart regardless of where it's from.
Right.
And Will has the episode in the field, and you know, Mike kind of just washes his hands of Dustin, Lucas, Max. And when Joyce takes Will home because she showed up at the school in absolute fear for Will as he had an episode, Mike just goes to Will's house and joins them. Like, I'm going to sleep here now. You know, I'm pretty sure this is about the now memories and the shadow monster. And hey, right. Will, you could be my spy. You know, that is a really great thing. Mike sometimes in season 2 gets a bad rap. He's called Emo Mike, at least on the message boards.
And I think that's so wrong for him to get such a bad rap.
Yeah, because he supports Will. That's his main thrust through this season. He comforts Will and saying like, hey, maybe it's not so bad. Maybe you'll be our spy. I know that you are inherently good. I mean, literally sleeps on the floor with him. He's like, don't worry. You don't have to sleep alone. I'll sleep in a sleeping bag. You know, Mike really steps up in a big way for Will.
And again, so important to developing season 3 and season 4, like that tension between Will and Mike. Yeah.
And they have that connection. That's why that scene is so important. They're both super scarred. So we joke about it. Mike is sad about a girl, and Will is literally, you know, being consumed by an otherworldly force. But Mike's thing is darker than people give it credit for. Yeah. He met what is in the story magic, what he met the love of his life for 1 week, and she evaporated, saving him, and he may never see her again.
Yeah, that's absolutely traumatic, especially at that age, too.
It's a huge thing. And people, like I said, oh, it's just a girl problem. Is that really just a girl problem?
No.
She is all, for all he knows, she is dead.
Yep.
Or surviving out in the woods for a long time.
And we're just talking about Eleven here. Before that, he lost his pretty much best friend who they thought died, and then we found out was attacked by a Demogorgon and was lost in the Upside Down. So all of that happened. I mean, give Mike a break, man.
And he's really like struggling too. In the first episode of season 2, they talk about he's doing bad in school, he's sassing his parents, he's pushing people away. It's more serious than you think. But of course, the plot gets going again. Mike is, you know, along for the ride. They do the drawings and they go to the tunnels and they save Hopper and they go to the lab, and Will sets the trap for the soldiers. And as the demo dogs
realizes it,
Mike realizes as the demo dogs start to advance, and he's saying it's a trap, Mike comes back in there and says, we need to make Will sleep. Mm-hmm. That's Mike who initiates that. Joyce makes the final call, but Mike is the one who said, I was wrong. Will's the traitor.
You know, you were talking about how people kind of like give Mike such a bad rap, but this is probably like the best season for Mike, honestly.
Because then after that, he tells Will to make sleep, and then Bob dies, and Mike is the one... Mike is the one who, as they're all sitting there just sulking about, you know, everyone who has died, including Bob, Mike says, we can't let him die in vain.
Right.
So motivates everybody, teens and adults included. And then it's Mike who comes up with the plan to wake up Will in a place where he can't recognize.
Right.
And they that leads to closed gates and does all the stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you're right. Mike season two is probably sub-MVP to Joyce. I think I give it to Joyce. But
Joyce does crush it this season.
But the plan does go a little wrong. After they get closed gate, the phone rings and the Dumma Dogs are on their way. And they're they're freaking out in the living room. Are they all going to die? And they're saved by a little girl Mike knows all too well, named 11. And along with all the others, Mike is saved. All the Dumma Dogs die and they finally reunite. And in just hugely emotional part. We waited 8 episodes for this.
Was this the final episode or the second to last?
Second to last. 8th episode of season 2.
Such a sweet moment, and it's made even sweeter by the fact that Mike never gave up on 11. Mm-hmm. Never, not once.
Yeah, that's a good point. And his first reaction is anger at Hopper.
Yeah.
Why couldn't you just have told you?
Oh, yeah.
You could
You're
have
right.
just given me just one inkling. So that I didn't have to spend the year thinking maybe dead.
Right.
Maybe dead.
Well, I forgot about that.
Yeah. How long do you think he would have waited? For 356 days and counting, what if 11 really was dead? How long does Mike just keep going?
I don't know. I can't even truly think of that because it just wouldn't work with the storyline.
Yeah.
But trying to set the storyline aside, I think everybody's grieving process is completely different. I don't think you could really say how long it would take. I mean, I was trying to compare it to anything in like real world situations. And you think of like parents of kids that were kidnapped.
Yeah.
Some of them.
And I don't think you can do the real world. It's part of the story.
Yeah.
Part of the story you have to accept is the magic connection between Mike and 11.
Right.
I mean, it's just it's just what it
is. I don't know.
So 11 is off to close gate. They're about to kiss, but Hopper's like, we got to go. Mike's on the bench with the rest of the kids. But after Steve gets beaten by Billy, they do hatch a plan to distract the Dumma Dogs. It works. You know, Mike and 11 finally get reunited in the epilogue at the Snowball.
Oh.
And just that, it's amazing we went all of season 2 without them talking. Because it's a secret sauce of season 1 is their relationship. And we just sacrifice that for season 2 with nothing. But we get that one little tidbit in the Snowball where she's like, I don't know how to dance. And Mike's say, just that same cadence of season 1, I don't either. You want to find out together? You know, just that attitude.
So
and just their relationship is so, you know, it's young love, it's puppy love, but there's also a deeper connection that is just part of the story.
Yeah, and I think from this moment, so season 1, season 2, we see this side of Mike.
Mm-hmm.
And then I know we're about to go into season 3. It just kind of changes.
Yeah.
The dynamic changes so much. So let's dive into that.
Well, they hit puberty at some point between season 2 and season 3 here. And they are dating and they are spending every moment together, kissing and just ditching
Hopper
their friends,
loves it, right?
Driving Hopper nuts. And eventually that comes to a boil where Hopper is like, Mike, you need to back off. And he scares Mike to not go over to 11's for the first day, like all summer. But Mike doesn't tell the truth, does he?
No.
He lies to 11 that Nana is sick.
Come on,
and
Mike.
And when caught in that lie, Elle dumps his ass.
Great scene.
And the next day, Will wants to play Dungeons & Dragons. Mike is frustrated, as you said, just so focused on 11. But something bubbles out with Will here. As Will is trying to get them to play Dungeons & Dragons, they have a huge fight. And the differences between Mike and Will are finally said out loud. When Will says, what, do you just want to swap spit with some girl? And Mike says, it's not my fault you don't like girls. And they have that fight and he goes out into the rain. Do you think this is the only time that Mike and Will in their whole lives have ever openly addressed the situation of Will's sexuality?
I don't think that Mike is addressing it in this. I think the storyline is leading that way, but I don't think that that's what Will or that's what Mike is meaning in that moment. I really don't think that he realizes that Will is gay at this time.
We disagree on that completely.
Oh, really?
I think Mike knows, maybe not to the point where he can, you know, eloquently express it. I mean, they are what, 14-year-old boys at this point. They're not exactly emotional maturity levels. But I think he's always known. I think they have always known this together.
Well,
this is a fact.
I think you saying that would be kind of true to Mike's character, that he is always like aware of other people's feelings. I didn't get that vibe, and I still kind of like, I feel the way I feel about this. So it'll be interesting to see how it's developed in season 5. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I was just kind of thinking of it more like he's just seeing Will as caught in the before, the upside down, and he just hasn't moved on yet.
There's definitely that in there.
Oh, of course. Yeah. But I also think like Mike's so caught up in 11 that he's not even like really able to identify what Mike's feeling at all, hardly.
Yeah.
Like he's so caught up in this new love.
So you're mixing the names. You're saying Mike is unable to identify what Will is feeling.
Yeah, because he's so caught up in 11. This is where I feel like Mike is becoming not a great friend.
We completely disagree on this point. Will is the one who has betrayed Mike at the beginning of this conversation by taking away some of the sacredness of 11 by saying, calling her some girl. Like, ironically,
which is not some girl to Mike.
Mike never wants to move on from that week where he met 11 and found the magical connection of his life. And Will just dismisses it right there. So what Mike does is retaliate back at him in a way that he shouldn't. And he knows he shouldn't have done that. They hit each other because they, you know, you can hurt the people you love the most. They're the people that you can hurt the most. And they do it to each other right there. Bam, bam. So we definitely have different views of this scene.
Well, I will say Mike is the character that I feel like I've struggled with the most. Mm-hmm. I didn't even anticipate that until we started like delving into his character. But
and I think you really have to take it all with a buttery salve of this is a horrible metaphor, but mix it all up with the emotional maturity of 14-year-old boys.
That's true.
Don't take everything they say at face value, and everything can change and they can drop stuff. Like, just it's a very bubbling time. They're not eloquently speaking their feelings.
No, that's true. Yeah, that's true.
And I was a 14-year-old boy and you never were.
I mean, maybe that's why.
So Mike and Lucas both realize that they have wronged Will, and they go to Will's house, and they come to the newly destroyed castle buyers, where Will tells them the mind flayer is back. And they go to Ellen Max, and they piece together that Billy is flayed, and they do the sauna test. They connect with Nancy and Jonathan to free Mrs. Driscoll. The whole plot of season 3. Eventually, this turns into a whole meat monster battle. Mike and 11 make up a little bit in the hospital lobby room. Does your species like M&Ms? And as they continue to search for the flayed, Mike's main thing is he is super worried about how much 11 is using her powers. And it's sort of Mike versus Max. So do you think Mike is wrong to worry about 11? Because Nancy also slams him down.
No, I don't think that he's wrong in this moment. First off, it's totally natural to worry about the people that you love. Mm-hmm. I mean, no matter what. But also, like, just because 11 has superpowers doesn't mean that she's invincible. Mm-hmm. She has already disappeared once for a full year to him. And it was directly related to her using her powers. So I think there's this very real fear for Mike that she could disappear again.
I know. And that is the core of why he's doing it. I completely agree. He says, I can't lose her again. I can't do that again.
Right.
But I think that Mike, the strategist, as far as what to do against the upside down, is brilliant. He is the one who decides to use 11 in the first place in season 1. In season 2, we talked about all the stuff he does. In season 3, he has kind of undermined himself. Mike, the strategist, has been undermined by Mike, the boyfriend, who's been doing some dumb S-H-I-T.
Oh my gosh.
Lying about Nanny.
Absolutely.
You know, he's been, you know, real possessive of 11 and really, like, you know, just taking it too far. Exactly. Clingy, possessive. As he apologizes later and just his baffling decisions. But he is right. What does Brenner say in season 4 happened to 11? She had a stroke from overusing her powers.
Yeah.
I mean, and her mental stuff, but she had the mental block and she blew a circuit, basically.
Yeah.
So while Max and Nancy say Mike doesn't know what he's talking about, Mike did kind of know that this was not good.
Yeah, agreed.
However, when Mike gets the real test isn't Max on her high horse about 11 doing the stuff that she wants to do, which is find her brother. Right. The real test for Mike comes when 11 says, Mike, trust me, I'll be okay. And Mike says, we don't know that, but 11 says, trust me, I'm doing this. Mike, absolutely. He gave his counsel and he accepts her decision outright.
Yeah.
I think Mike passes the test, but he gets so much guff. The character of Mike. There's a lot of hate for the character of Mike. He gets so much.
Is there really?
There is. There is.
Oh.
He gets so much guff for this, but he passes the test, in my opinion.
I agree with you. I think he does like well in this moment. This moment.
Yeah. Let's face it.
He's not super great.
That's why I took pains to separate Mike the strategist from Mike the boyfriend. So in the cabin, the battles keep going. The meat flayer finds 11, destroys the cabin. They flee to the grocery store and they're 11 has been bitten. Yeah, 11 has been bitten in the leg. And we have this little scene in the aisleway where Mike is tending the wounded soldier, 11.
Yeah, they do say it makes you crazy.
What makes you crazy?
You never heard that term. You know, like the phrase, like, blank makes you crazy, like the word.
Girlfriends?
No, not girlfriends.
Boyfriends?
No, not boyfriends either. It's like a feeling, or, yeah, like something, like old people say to each other sometimes.
Old people?
Yeah, what I want to say is that I know that I...
God. He's still so immature that he can't just tell her that he loves her.
Exactly.
Come on, Mike. It's like painful to watch. Honestly, in my opinion, this is one of his worst failings. He can be so attuned in like caring for other people's feelings around him, yet he's so scared to admitting that he loves 11. Honestly, why? Why? Why is this so hard for you?
I think there's room for both Mikes in the show. Like that. That's life, baby. You know?
Right. They do a really good job of that. Like I was talking about season 1, season 2, we see this one dynamic of Mike and then it totally shifts. Like you what did you say? He goes from the what to the boyfriend?
The strategist to the boyfriend.
Yeah.
Very different.
And I do think it fits. Like they make it fit really well.
Now, I love how he's like, he thinks this workaround by saying blank. Blank makes you crazy.
God, he's so dumb.
Will somehow work to both convey the message, but also seamlessly avoid having said it.
Old people say it. Old people?
So, Kathleen, as a dumb boy, at one point myself, here is my definitive list of top 5 songs Mike should have used in this moment to get the point across. I want to know what blank is. Could have done that. Could have done, when a blank loves a woman.
Oh, wait.
When a man blanks a woman.
Oh, yeah. Ooh,
that might be taken the wrong way. Okay. All you need is blank. Blank. Beatles. Stop. In the name of blank. Could have done that one. But what they really should have done is, what's blank got to do? Got to do with it?
No.
Tina Turner.
What he should have just said is that he loves her. Okay?
Oh.
Come on.
Okay.
There is no song or phrase that could have made this work. Nothing. Because
I think the Tina Turner would have done it.
Okay, except for the fact that she's lived her entire life in a laboratory. Yeah. How is she supposed to know all these songs?
Absolutely, you know, and she desperately wants to hear it too.
Right.
The act, oh, you're,
yeah,
you're
she,
right.
She 100%, like, she understands love. We but just, how could she, like, how could she know all of these songs?
Good point. All right. So at the mall, Mike, Eleven, and Max, they actually, they get chased by the meat flayer in the Gap. They actually get beaten by Billy. And they miss most of the fireworks and stuff like that.
Oh, that's right.
But Eleven is saved by Billy. Joyce turns the key and everyone's happy ever after, except for they're moving to California.
Nobody's happily ever after. Oh, Hopper's, yeah.
Hopper's dead. They're moving. Okay.
Billy's dead. They're moving away.
You know, they defeated the Upside Down.
No, they didn't.
Okay. All right. Well, I guess we'll continue on then.
So season four.
Season four, Mike is the only character to go from to be in both the Indiana plot lines and the California plot lines. He starts in Indiana at Hawkins High, a member of Eddie's Hellfire Club. They have this thrilling campaign victory where Erica fills in for Lucas and yay, we win the campaign.
Right.
That's when Mike flies out to California. So he's actually never aware of Chrissy's death. He leaves that night or that morning. So he never actually realizes that until he's back at the end of season four.
Gosh, I didn't even make that connection.
He arrives in California. Eleven is going to take him to Rinkomania, where her ruse that she is a popular girl who has a bunch of friends where she goes to parties is eventually exposed. Eleven gets milkshake all over her. Will tells Mike, you know,
so sad.
Will says she's lying. Will says you're not paying attention to me. You hate me, apparently, now. I'm such a third wheel. So the whole Rinkomania incident doesn't go well. Not a great first day for Mike in California. But I was always surprised when in that dinner scene where Argyle's talking this risotto, it's smacking, dude.
Smacking.
When Mike first speaks up and says, oh, she was fine. And Mike says, she didn't look fine.
No.
That remark, where does that come from?
So, gosh, this is like, this whole situation, I think, is really kind of deep for Mike. So up to this point, Eleven has never lied to Mike. All this time, Mike has never had any reason to not trust everything that she said, like, you know, about her acclimating to her new school and her life in California. So he arrives in Cali. He's got the air of shyness. They're so excited to be back together, to find that basically everything that she has said to him this whole time has been a lie. And that shakes him. Oh. I think that really shakes his faith in her and his faith in their relationship, the security of their relationship. Yeah. And it makes him angry and hurt. And it's rightfully so. Mm. He should be angry that she has lied to him, even though we as the audience understand why.
Yeah, and though Nana's still doing fine, so might want to get off your high horse about that a little bit, Mike.
Yeah.
But
and also think of this, like, coupled with the, you know, Mike and Will situation, that, like, Mike's also mad that Will never said anything to Mike.
Yes.
And, like, so there's already this tension between their friendship.
Yeah. And I think Mike pieces together some other pieces. he gets more information. Like, when he says, like, hey, I've been bullied, you're being bullied, that's the same thing. And he really understands that it's not the same thing for 11.
Yeah, no.
11 was literally raised in a lab trying to navigate high school. Joyce, where are you at here? God, Joyce. But I think Mike doesn't calibrate for that in this moment when he says she didn't look fine. And I think he finds more information. And eventually Will is kind of the one to talk some sense into him, too.
Right, yeah.
Quit being a little bee, basically.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. And you have to think of it from this point, like, the only power that Eleven has always really had was her superpowers. Mm-hmm. So it's like having a limb cut off for her.
So Mike and Eleven the next day have the From Mike fight before Eleven is arrested. They're super mad at each other, and now they can't even work it out because Eleven has been arrested for skate attacking Angela. And eventually she's taken from the, you know, the Lenora Hill's police by Dr. Owens.
Yeah.
And then Mike, Will, Jonathan, everybody, they're put under house arrest. So they're separated even more for possibly months, right?
Right.
And Will makes the good call. I can't wait to talk the Will episode. But Will's like, they ain't going to save anything. It's like us who save everybody every time. We need to get out of here. Right. Thank goodness they do, because the house is then machine gunned by the government.
I love when Argyle pulls up and he's like, the buyer's having a party and they didn't even tell me.
That's not cool. Yeah. They're on the road again. They find Nina via Utah with Susie, and they drive out to Nevada and they say, okay, we found her and we're going to go find Eleven. And this is when Mike opens up about what has been causing him so much tumult and turmoil to Will.
Right. I have to say,
she was born special. Maybe I was one of the first people to realize that. But the truth is, when I stumbled on her in the woods, she just needed someone. It's not fate. It's not destiny. It's just simple, dumb luck. And one day she's going to realize that I'm just some random nerd that got lucky that Superman landed on his doorstep. I mean, at least Lois Lane.
Such a revealing scene for Mike, that he's finally, finally admitting his insecurities out loud about Eleven. We always see Mike as the kind of leader of the group, always confident, moving forward. But his love for Eleven has always been something that he couldn't be confident in. And now we finally have some explanation.
Yeah. And I think this is where he grows up a little bit. He's got those two parts that we've been talking about this whole time. The leader, the heart, the supernatural, scientific, you know, approach, and the dumb, dumb teenage boy.
Yep.
And they kind of combine. I think he grows up a little bit here. He grows up most when he gives the opposite of this speech to Eleven.
Yeah.
In that, when she's in the piggyback, the pizza dough freezer. And Will is kind of the one who shakes him out here. Who's like, hey, you bring something to the table. You're the heart. Yeah. And he shows him the painting, and obviously that moment is very meaningful for Will as well, as he kind of gives Mike the speech of his own feelings, but using the cover of Eleven, which we certainly, but this is kind of the other part of the
Mike's side.
Yeah, Mike's side. And Mike does not pick up on the deeper meaning from Will. Do you think Mike is just oblivious?
Absolutely, I think he is. Although we did discuss this earlier, and we kind of disagreed on this point.
And this is a little different. This is not Mike overall knowing about Will. This is about the moment where.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I don't know. I feel like Mike has not really been a good friend to Will these last two seasons. Not like he's consciously trying not to be a good friend. He's just been so involved with Eleven that he hasn't been present for Will. Mm-hmm. So he's like so caught up that really, I think it's made him oblivious.
I think he doesn't notice what Will says. And people say like, how could he possibly not notice? What I love about doing these podcast episodes from the characters' perspectives is thinking about the actual journey here. What are they doing? What are they doing while they're in this backseat of this car? They're driving to Nevada to his girlfriend, trying to beat the military who is going there to kill her.
Yeah, so he's got that on his mind.
He's got something going on. This isn't a casual drive to Wild Waves where Will is just like, boy, you know, I think I really might be in love with you in a secret thing. Like, there is something going on with Mike here.
He's got his own internal struggles.
Yeah, and
I think it's fair that he was oblivious.
I think that's the real question. Is it fair that he's oblivious? I think so. And it just brings so much. Oh, I don't want to get on the Will thing, but it just be so.
I can't
so
wait to delve into Will's side.
Rich,
oh my gosh.
Gosh, yeah, that really is going to be rich. I can't wait to hear your thoughts on that side of the conversation. But they save Eleven. They get there. Well, they provide Eleven a ride after she's blown up the whole military, including the helicopter. And they execute the piggyback plan. And Mike is, refusing to try pineapple pizza, which is thumbs up from you, Mike. And his job is to kind of stand by Eleven and hold her hand. And when things are going wrong, when Vecna has Max and Eleven in the red suit mind world and he's about to destroy them, Mike gives the motivational love speech that Eleven needs to defeat Vecna. And I mean, what is the real impact of this speech? Is it really the moment that pushes Eleven over?
Yes, I 100% think so. Words can hold so much meaning. I mean, that's why people pay thousands of dollars for motivational speakers. Why encouraging teachers are always the most successful with their students. Words drive action. Eleven has been so defeated this whole season, felt so powerless, so self-conscious, so beaten down with losing Hopper. Mike is really the person she loves most in the world. And so to hear him finally admit his love for her and his confidence in her, I think this finally allows her to see the power that she has in herself. So yes, I think she very well could have been defeated without this speech, not because she wasn't strong enough, but because she didn't think that she was strong enough.
Yeah, because she grew up in a lab, as you said. You've been bubbling on my take about this speech the whole time, but Eleven longs to be loved.
Yeah.
To find unconditional love. So much so that when she realizes unconditional love is even a thing, the only example she has of it is her being birthed by her mom. She has no other example in her life.
Yeah.
And she has Mike, who won't say it. Yeah. He won't say it. And finally, he's doing the opposite of what he said to Will. I love you. The dumb boy is matching up with the smart strategist here, you know, the heart.
Finally, it's about damn time.
And remember, Will is the one who says, Mike, give her this speech, give her this speech. You know, they're all together in this. I truly believe that. And that goes such a long way. It's really the first example of Eleven receiving unconditional love said outright.
I don't know. I think she feels the unconditional love from Hopper. But at this point, we have to remember that she thinks Hopper is dead. So.
True. And so she's been going through that. Yeah, she's been going through that. That's a great point. Well, it works. The screen goes dark and Vecna is being put back on his butt. And they drive back to sheet. Max, of course, is not doing well. She dies and Eleven starts her heart. And they drive back to Hawkins, apparently in silence, because she does not tell Mike about Max.
No.
Max hears that from Dustin and Lucas. And Will eventually tells Mike, apparently they also didn't talk about this on the drive back, that Henry is not dead. He's just hurting. And they all witness the ultimate end where Hawkins cracks over this wonderfully scenic bluff and the season ends.
This like saddest, like most unresolved season of all of them so far.
We've called it Deathly Hallows Part 1 multiple times and it really is.
Yeah.
It's Empire Strikes Back. It's Deathly Hallows Part 1.
Part 1. We're just waiting for Part 2 to drop.
What do you think's in store for Mike in Season 5?
Oh, boy. Well, my hope is that honestly, that the rest of the group are going to be a lot more mature, that we're going to have, we've talked about it so much, that we're going to have another time jump. Yeah. But now that Mike's finally confident enough to tell Eleven how he feels, I'm hoping that this will make him more secure in his relationship with Eleven.
Yes.
And that will result in him finally like paying more attention to Will. So I'm really hoping to kind of see Mike and Will's friendship develop through Will's feelings.
I think you're right. I think it's going to be more about Mike and Will. And this was kind of Mike and Eleven getting from season one to season four, sort of their completion of their story. I think they're together for life here now.
Yeah. I think that, I mean, we can talk about this in the Will episode, but I think season five is going to be a lot about Will.
Yeah. And honestly, as it should.
Yeah.
Will is kind of the one of the main characters who's kind of been sidelined. We're already getting into our Will.
Oh, gosh, here we go.
But I really like what you said, that Mike finally finding some security. You know, and he was insecure the whole time. That's why he didn't tell Eleven that he loves him. You know, that's why he has the Superman or the Lois Lane complex. And I think that Mike and Eleven together are an amazing team.
Yeah.
And I love that. Obviously, Eleven is the actual MVP. She's the LeBron. You know, Mike's more of a Chris Bosh or a Dwayne Wade type of guy. I'm talking about basketball here. Oh, okay. You're staring at me completely blank.
I mean, of course. Just like that's those basketball players that you just mentioned.
And it's like those are like a 10-year-old reference as well. That's my analysis for season 5. All right. Well, we will be back for Will. which is going to be a great episode, I can tell.
I think it's going to be a long one. I think the last two of our podcasts are going to be long ones. There's just too much to go over.
Well, luckily, everybody, before Stranger Things 5, we got some time.
Oh, all right. Yeah.
My name is Miles.
I'm Kathleen.
A good night.